Our mission is really simply put to bring the best data, tools, and educational content to sports bettors around the world.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of The Cusp Show, the Columbia University Sports Podcast. I'm Tom Richardson, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Joe Favorito. Joe, we haven't been together for a hosting pod for a few weeks. It's good to see you. And we are recording this on the day that I think some history was made here in the Northeast. A couple of hours ago, we had an earthquake, a 4.7 earthquake.
Crazy.
With Joe in New Jersey and me in Connecticut, we both felt, and it was kind of shocking, no pun intended. What'd you think, Joe? Is that any indication of what we're going to see tonight and for Women's March Madness with the Final Four?
It was funny. Jay McManus, who teaches at the B School and used to work at ESPN, put something up this morning because there was a B School women's sports conference today. And she said, and the earth just shook here at Columbia while we're talking about women's sports, which is very reflective of the world we're in today.
Okay.
Which I thought that was pretty good. Yeah. And Tom, let's not forget, we've got an eclipse coming on Monday too.
Right. So earthquakes, eclipses. And then for anyone who was in the New York area or the Northeast the other day, midweek of this week, it was like a monsoon between the heavy rains and the heavy winds. So I'm glad this week is ending. And we got an amazing weekend of sports. We got March Madness, of course, Final Fours. The state of Connecticut is obviously quite glued to their TVs right now, watching these two incredible teams. And I think tonight, Joe, I was listening to some of the sports pods this morning. They're all predicting breaking the record of 12.3 from LSU Iowa the other night. And some folks are thinking it might get as high as 15 million, which really would be kind of a miracle.
Yeah, well, and it's well-deserved, but I know we want to quickly get to our guests.
Yeah, let's get into our guests. So a lot of you folks know, anybody who's been around the New York digital media and tech scene, and now more broadly American, because he has relocated, probably knows at least the name, but many of you actually know him because he's had such an interesting career at places like BAM Tech, the NHL, ESPN. He's been an entrepreneur with Action Network, which got sold a couple years ago. We're talking about Matt Restivo, who now lives in Colorado, and he's now the CEO of OddsJam, which is a betting, a news and information and data platform for bettors. Really interesting company we're going to hear about. Any longtime listeners may remember Restivo here with me and Joe 5 years ago, 2019, when he was a fresh-faced chief product officer of Action Network.
Was gambling legal at that time, Tom?
It was the year after. That's what triggered ActionNet, right? Right, Matt?
Yeah. I joined Action a few months before PASPA was repealed in 2018. But yeah, I was on the pod in 2019. It's great to be back with you guys. Cool.
We should have had an AI like review of what you said back then and see if all your insights hold up. Anyway, let's get into it. It's really good to see you and have you back on the show. I know a little bit about OddsJam from some research and also talking to him about it previously. But why don't you explain to everybody what you're doing and how you're differentiating yourselves in the world of kind of more sophisticated and nuanced betting, like arbitrage betting and things like that?
Yeah. OddsJam is the Bloomberg terminal for sports betting. We're a subscription business and we find the best bets from the broadest set of odds data in the industry. And we educate consumers on how to bet, right? You can't just hand a trader a Bloomberg terminal and suddenly they're successful. So we like to think, our mission is really simply put to bring the best data, tools, and educational content to sports bettors around the world.
Just very superficially, it's a little bit like the initial positioning of Action Network, correct?
Yeah, it was interesting. So Action, it's funny that what we built at Action, at least the time that I was there, was we built an audience machine, right? I mean, when I joined in 2018, Chad Millman had come on board, and Chad's an awesome guy, huge name of the industry. And he hired an elite set of talent, but nobody was reading anything. We had like 10,000 users a month. And we built out an audience machine where essentially we invested really deeply into some Google tech called Google Amp. This was where everyone was pushing people. And we sort of had the growth hack idea to make Google Amp our only article page. At the time, the New York Times was doing Google Amp, but it was like a secondary page to their article page. And so we were pushing all traffic to Google Amp, and they rewarded us tremendously. And so Action ended up at the top of the SERP page, Google Search Engine Result page, for lots and lots of betting queries, game, picks for, whatever, picks for, UConn, Alabama, or whatever. And that was the first big sort of smash on the Action side. We had a subscription product, but it was never like sort of the core focus of the business. We never could figure out pricing. We couldn't really get the offering right. And that's something that really we've really figured out and cracked the nut on at Odds Jam.
So just give the audience a quick overview of like how have things progressed in the last 5 years since the early days of Action when you got that app out and you were doing what you just described and where we are as an industry now, separate from Odds Jam, just generally.
Action was great. Action was a rewinding the clock the last 5 years. Action was a great outcome. The Churning Group guys are great. Obviously, we sold that in 2021. I left shortly before. I cut my own teeth as a founder, raised some money, had an idea, executed on it for 6 months. It didn't work. I'm not a quitter in general, but I think I learned in the last 5 years that quitting actually does have some utility, right? Like when you're on the wrong path, actually knowing when to get off that path is sort of really smart, or can be really smart. We pivoted our business into the NFT space. I was obsessed with Zed Run at the time, which was digital horses. It was like it's still my favorite use case of an
Tom,
NFT.
where's your snack?
Well, hey, wait, Joe. I mean, some of my friends know this. The way I got into Zed Run was by guess who? Mr. Restivo.
Yeah,
I'll
I
never
was calling
forget. You
everybody.
texted me randomly one night, like at 9 o'clock at night, said, "You got to check this out." And I mentioned it to my son. Next thing you know, I'm buying digital horses.
Yeah, I
And by the
know.
way, I still have them if you're interested.
Yeah, I'm interested. I still love that product, that team. I think it was like one of the coolest applications. Like you own the horse, you can train the horse, you can breed the horse, eventually you can feed the horse, whatever. And obviously you can race the horse, and then racing against other people for money in a random algorithm. It just seemed like it was like the one thing that obviously art makes sense to me too, but and that was obviously the first real application. I think a lot of this was driven by it was the first time people could really spend their Ethereum on something that they felt like they owned. And so that was really 21, 22 for me.
With a rising value. Remember how it was
Yeah, I mean, oh
appreciating
man,
so
ETH was
quickly?
crazy. ETH, it was
Yeah.
up like 4,500, 40, that
Yeah.
was, it was crazy. And then, obviously 20. So I had sold the business that I started to another company called Lucky Trader, which was really like me reuniting with some guys I had built Action with. And that was, became a co-founder of Lucky Trader, and our vision there was really to build the trusted resources for digital assets. And the team is still cranking along. We had to make that company smaller and smaller over 2022, and I left at the end of 2022 to join the Odds Jam guys. The Odds Jam team had reached out to me in 2021 and said, "Hey, will you come on and be an advisor?" And I said, "No." I said, "Hey, you guys seem like you know what you're doing. I'm doing my own thing. Good luck." Kind of a pound sand like mentality, but they are very persistent, and I'm glad they were. It's a really fun business. We're growing like crazy in a space that's obviously growing, and so it's been challenging, but it's been a lot of fun.
So walk us through how it works.
So we basically have we spend a lot of time publishing educational based content, Joe, that is really highly engaging, right? So we explain we try to rewire the mind of the sports bettor to get them to understand that you shouldn't be thinking about who's going to win UConn, Alabama, and then betting on that. It's the wrong way to bet. It's really you and your wallet against the sports books, right? They have a 10% vig on every bet that you place. And so you're just going to get waxed over time. Like
Right.
just with that. I mean, you're not smarter than the thousands of people working at these sportsbook companies building models, right? You're just not. And I think there's probably less than 500 people in America who make, real money betting on sports. And it's hard to get action down, and that's a whole other path we can talk about. But the way that our product works is we really take a look at the market from a top-down perspective. So one of the beautiful things about sports betting in America, in certain states, New Jersey, Colorado, and others, New York, there's a lot of sports books operating, right? In Colorado, there's 19 legal sports books. And so what that means is at any given moment, there's going to be a market that's not set quite right. Because sports books are all setting lines independently, because they're all balancing action on both sides of the bet independently, it leaves opportunity for a sports book to just totally be off on a particular market. And that's what our software identifies. It identifies it in two ways. We have an arbitrage tool that allows you to effectively understand when you can basically place a bet at two different sports books and have a guaranteed return because you're placing some gambling people don't like when I say the word guaranteed or risk-free
Or
or whatever,
risk-free, which has
or
gotten a lot of
even return.
controversial in the industry because someone on
Totally.
ESPN used that phrase.
Well, that was pretty ugly. but and I think we all know what we're talking about there. But yeah, I mean, the issue is it's actually factual when we say it, right? Because there is no other outcome. You have UConn to, let's just call it UConn money line or Alabama money line. And if there's a point at which you can get where you can basically bet different amounts on both sports books such that you will guarantee a 1 or 2 or 3% return, you will win. And so our tools identify that. And that's generally how people sort of come to understand what OddsJam is they come in, they see Alex's content. Alex is the co-founder. They start to understand, oh wow, this tool identifies opportunities where I can make risk-free money. Shouldn't say it, but I mean it is factually accurate. And then they sort of get some experience betting. Obviously, you have to have a lot of sports books to take. The more sports books you have, the more opportunity there is for you to take advantage of markets being off. But yeah, that's generally the first moment where it really clicks for someone. And another example, I feel like I've been talking for too long, but another example I like to give is think about buying Apple stock, right? If you wanted to buy Apple stock, you can go to Charles Schwab, you can go to Fidelity, you can go to, E-Trade, whatever. Apple stock right now is trading at 170. And no matter what brokerage you go to, it trades at 170. It's not the same in the sports betting world. In the sports betting world,
That's a good way
lines
to
can be
say it,
different,
yeah.
vig could be different. So it just leaves opportunity for
But
inefficiency.
just as a practical matter, if someone's using your tool on this arbitrage betting, and let's say in Colorado, for example, where you live, there are examples of books that you don't have accounts at that are the best bet, so to speak, for tonight, for Final Four. Or it sounds like you'd have to be signed up and have the apps for what? Six, seven, eight, 10 or more sports books to take advantage of that?
I would say that's the most efficient. That's the way you would
Really?
make the
And you,
most
but so
value out
just
of
as
it.
again, as a practical matter, how many people are really going to do that?
The people who are motivated by not losing. And I think it takes time, right? I mean, it really does. Like when I say our goal is to rewire the mind of the sports bettor, that's how we do it, through educational content, through helping them understand that, anybody who says I'm a FanDuel guy, it's like, cool. You're just a person who
You're a
loses a
loser.
shitload of money. Yeah, you're a
Right.
loser.
Ooh.
So, do you want to be a winner or do you want to be a
No, I
loser?
never thought of it that way, Joe. I'm joking when I say you're a loser, but most people I know do use one book and they're not thinking this way. Anyway, Joe, I'm sorry. I think I interrupted something you were going to say.
Nope.
Oh, okay. Another quick follow-up. So your goal is to obviously attract, get as many users, kind of like Action Network, get as many users as possible. And then how are you monetizing?
Our job is to improve and add value to these tools over time, make the product experience better, help people find value. And so our we 90% of our revenue is from customers paying us. And so they make our business possible.
Go ahead,
Go
Joe.
ahead, Tom.
Yeah, just one more on this. What do you make of some of the books getting into the media side of the business themselves, like
I think it's
FanDuel
smart.
TV and stuff like that?
I think it's smart as hell. I mean, I think this whole landscape is going to change a ton. It's funny, as we were like right before we're taping, Norby Williamson is out at ESPN
Sure.
and Burke Magnus is taking over. It's just like, you know, that ESPN is a great content production house, right? But that is, you know, that's where that business is likely to be. And who knows who's going to be the owner of that business and when. So I just think it's so impossible to predict what this is going to look like. It's very clear Google is doing a really good job executing on YouTube TV. It's great for them to have the direct, you know, the direct TV rights. So I think the idea that a sports book in 3 years, kind of after the state growth sort of narrative is gone, and you know they're all launching sort of iCasino plays, then I can see these sports books who have a lot of capital and a very big market cap, you know, entering into the rights game. You know, I don't know if Apple lasts. We'll see if MLS works. So I think it is smart to have, you know, a FanDuel TV, a DraftKings TV, and it's, you know, something that exists, I think, in Europe as well.
Yep. Matt, why don't you kind of, there's been an ebb and flow, obviously, of interest, innovation around the sports gambling space recently. We've now seen, you know, the NCAA trying to get states to crack down on prop betting for NCAA. You've seen other companies on the micro betting side, like Invenue, come up and do things with the leagues. What's kind of like your take of the gambling industry last 6 months, you know, things you're watching, things that are amazing you, things that are surprising you?
It's funny. I think in the quote unquote sports industry, right? The industry that we live in, I feel like there's this temperature that it's like, oh, it's all turning negative. You know, oh, like, you know, there's it, the backlash is here. And it's like, no, the backlash isn't anywhere near here. I mean, the backlash is coming, but we're not even close. Like, people reference the Wall Street Journal article by Caitlin, which was excellent. But that was an iCasino article. This woman got into $400,000 in debt playing slots and blackjack, which I think is stupid. I think states that are going to regulate this, it's just dumb. The idea of, you know, I had a personal experience when I was 19 years old playing and gambling illegally in Vegas when I was at CES in 2005, and
Ooh,
basically
I love
like was
this.
credit card advancing money out of my, like when I was in college, like when, you know, $15 for a 30 rack of beer really meant a lot, you know, to me. I was, you know, just playing roulette until 7 in the morning, betting on numbers all over the board, like complete degenerate gambling. I won it all back at 7 a.m., went to sleep, woke up the next day, went to the show, and then the next night went back, lost it all. And so I think like that was a massive moment. And then I had credit card debt until I got out of college that I had to pay off. You know, nobody wants 19, 24% AP, you know, APR or whatever it is. So to me, it was a huge personal lesson of, you know, that was basically the last time I ever played a game where I felt like I didn't have a chance to win, right?
What are your thoughts on the DFS 2.0 craze
Oh, I
and some
love
of the
it.
controversies legally around that? Could you just
Obsessed with
talk to
it.
that? Yeah, just to
I mean,
talk about that a little bit.
it's such a damn good product. I mean, Jeremy Levine and I were co-founders at Lucky Trader. I mean, I have a huge amount of respect. He's an incredible entrepreneur. What they've been able to build, Adam at Prize Picks as well, and
You're
Jay,
talking about on
they
the
all
first
deserve.
reference, I think, was Underdog, correct? Jeremy's
Yeah,
team.
Underdog. I mean, I just think our Underdog and Prize Picks paved a path not too dissimilar from what DraftKings and FanDuel did. I mean, everybody said it, right? I mean, this is the way DraftKings and FanDuel got big. You know, they obviously had their failed merger, but they were doing the same exact thing in the DFS days, skirting the law. You know, trying or basically, I don't know if skirting the law is the right way to say it, but at least operating in a gray area.
Finding loopholes, yeah.
Yeah, operating in a gray area, right? I mean, it's kind of like Fliff. Fliff is like this
Right.
sweepstakes casino sports book, and you talk to their team, and they're like, well, if you regulate us, are you going to regulate the Monopoly game at McDonald's? And it's like, bro, you're operating in a gray area. Like, chill out. Like, don't like try to be all highbrow. It's like, talk to me about Monopoly. But yeah, I mean, I personally, the reason I like it, the reason I like have such a positive reaction to it is because consumers love it. Consumers want to play sports like it's the lottery. And that's like the key unlock that people need to learn. And I think the sports books are learning it by offering SGPs, right? Every time you log into a sports book, they're pushing some shitty single game parlay on you that you didn't even, you know, develop yourself. So I think, like, I do find it hilarious that you talk about your friend who's like a FanDuel bettor or a DraftKings bettor. It's like there's people who open up the app, will place the recommended same game parlay that just shows up when you
Right.
open up the app. Like, how Like, that's just like, I mean, that's lottery level dumb. Yeah, that is like, you're gonna bet on the thing that the people who are trying to take your money are pushing to you. It's like crazy. Anyway,
But you know, as a product guy, they're doing that because people must be using it, right?
they're doing it because people are using it. Yeah. I mean, everything was like, in the Super Bowl was like, Mahomes over, Kelsey to score, Pacheco, whatever. All this, like, it's just like play at the minds of like the narrative, which is not a way to win. And look, I respect if people just, this is sports betting in general. The people who defend it will tell you it's an entertainment tax. And to a certain degree, I think that's true. People expect to lose, but come on. I don't know. Like, once you're presented the case of like, you're really cool, just like throwing your money away, like you don't want any edge over the sports book in a world in which, it's possible to get an edge. That's where Odds Jam comes in. Anyway, sorry, I'm way off
That's all right. Now,
topic now. I'm rambling.
what's the latest in like the pecking order for the sports? Like NFL still number one by a long shot. Could you just talk about like the top five that you see based on on your traffic and stuff?
I mean, it's NFL, college football, NBA. Those are by far the most, those are the most in handle, and the
Did
NFL is
this
just so
kind of
dominant.
explosive college basketball season, or at least on the women's side, help a little bit?
I think college basketball helps. There's a lot of volume, and it certainly brings in a lot of interest. I mean, it's definitely one of the best sporting events of the year. It's just sort of like I look at the events as ways to pull in people who are, considering betting. It's like, when is someone's betting interest going to peak? It's sure as shit not going to peak in like August when everyone's on vacation or, out
Or
with their
like the
family or
Masters,
whatever.
like would you guys do a big push because of the Masters coming up next week?
We'll do a little bit. Yeah, golf is a big one that is still like a niche betting market. But the people who, I mean, every golfer, I mean, it's like, I don't know who people who put a tee down without having something on the line. So it's like the intersection is really high, but it's still sort of a niche betting audience, if that makes sense.
Matt, talk a little bit about the Ohtani incident and what that means. And people saying, well, this is the end of betting. This is what's going to happen. Did it help raise some awareness? Did it point out issues that are out there? Your thoughts on kind of that whole thing with athlete engagement and obviously the NBA going through something with, one of the Raptors players now.
Yeah, Porter. It's not a good look. It doesn't help the industry. I think it's the NFL, it's funny because like 9 months ago people were like bitching about the NFL and how like they were just like suspending players for four games for like betting on non-NFL games in the facility. And now the NFL actually like looks quite good considering the recent news. Yeah, I mean, I think this is just the start of these types of scandals, and they're bad and they're ugly. I mean, we also do tend to forget there was a world before sports betting was legal, and there was still a shitload of people who were betting. What was the name of that ref? Donaghy or something?
Tim Tim Donaghy.
Tim
Tim
Donaghy,
Donaghy.
Tim Donaghy, right? Yeah, like, I mean, that scandal was like, that had to be like 2008, 2009. Yeah, I mean these things are gonna happen. Integrity of the game is paramount, and it should be at the fore focus. If you're the league, you should be less focused on making money and more focused on how you can ensure that you have integrity in your game. And I'm not sure. And look, leagues, based on my experience working with them and being around them, all they give a shit about is like making more money for their owners. So, I worry about that incentive structure.
Yeah, it does. I mean, there's been a lot of commentary on this, just how the leagues have gone too far in terms of the integration into virtually all aspects of their business. And I for one, think they've gone a little bit too far in their desire to get more revenue. But that's another thing. You want to talk for a few, because we have about 10
I
minutes
think people,
left.
by the way, I think people selling sports teams are smart.
Really? So tell
Interesting.
us why you say that.
Nobody knows the next growth angle. I think the world, it's just crazy the world we lived in where people got paid from TV deals that people didn't watch, right? And it was like 30% of people watched, and that was by far the biggest source of revenue. people, everybody locked up a cycle. COVID hit, everybody locked up a cycle. And so now all of these sort of traditional media companies, in my view, traditional media companies have, you know, another sort of 5 to 10 years where they're going to hang on to their rights. And then we're going to see what happens to the cable bundle as it continues to decline down from 80 to 70 to or whatever, be 60 and lower. Gaming was always a next big unlock that could happen. It could bring a lot of capital into the space that can get, you know, that can fill the pockets of the owners. But I don't see, I think live sports obviously will always be valuable. But like, where are we going to squeak out the next? It's already so expensive to attend an event. It's $25 to $40 a park at anything you go to. And like, I just don't see the next sort of big leg to have those assets appreciate. And they're really expensive assets, and they're hard to trade. So I think, like, yeah, I don't know. That's my view.
Well, I mean, but we're on the verge of an NBA announcement probably the next few months about what their next deal is going to look like. And correct me if I'm wrong, but most of the experts are predicting a 2x minimum and a
Yeah,
3x maybe
double.
maximum. But
It'll double.
think about what we're saying just kind of casually. Like 2x, 3x at this moment in time, based on what you just said, is kind of crazy, but it's real because they know that. What's, as you said, with what however long the bundle lasts, the live sports programming from the top sports is the most desirable programming, and there's always a company willing to step up. I mean, look at what Amazon just did to get the NFL playoff game away from Peacock.
Yeah.
You know, last year's game was 110 million, and I forget what the Amazon number was, like 140 or 50 million, I believe. Think about that for one game. So
Yeah.
if you can reset the my point is. For big tech especially, they have different criteria about what success looks like with these investments.
They do.
And
That's
as
true.
long as their ambitions in the media business continue, which I think they will because they've all discovered the endless fountain of revenue called advertising businesses, retail advertising, seriously, Apple, Amazon, et cetera, like why wouldn't you get into sports? It is a perfect complement to their advertising ambitions.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've talked about that on the pod numerous
I don't have a
times.
count. I honestly, there's people who pay attention to it a lot more than I do. Certainly the right cycle. You know, I don't know. I if you're just like a billionaire, I just don't know that you buy these things and they 10x anymore. And I think
Yeah,
that's
well,
how it
maybe
used to
10x,
be.
but you don't know if you get 10. I mean, look, we're seeing interest. Look, some of these franchise valuations show in the NWSL. Last couple of weeks have, I mean, everything is really hot because there's scarcity in this area that becomes very appealing to wealthy investors.
So
So,
was Overwatch, by the way. Anyway, but
yeah, I
that's
don't
another
know if that's a
conversation.
fair comparison. Yeah.
Anyway,
Yeah.
by the way,
I
Jessica
with
Berman, the commissioner of the National Women's Soccer League, elite human being.
Yeah, for sure. We got about 5 minutes left. I got to get your updated thoughts on Elon Musk and X. So you have been a longtime Twitter guy. Joe's been a longtime Twitter guy. I have retreated the last year or so for different reasons. But I have so I haven't been keeping up with you on Twitter, Matt. So what's your feeling about this, both personally and on behalf of Odds Jam?
Well, I'll take it backwards. I mean, I think it's still the best live forum. That's not to say it couldn't be supplanted. There are some interesting apps. There's this app called Real, and it's a sports app, and it's like a live forum thing. It was kind of interesting. It's sort of like there's like all these gamified mechanics and, you know, things you can do inside the product. I'm not super deeply familiar with it, but I did find it interesting. The personally on Twitter, Tom, I'm curious, why did you step back?
I just didn't like what it was becoming. I don't like the moves he's made. I don't like kind of the whole business side of it. I just feel like it's also personal. Everything, in my opinion, that he's doing is driven by his personal demons and personal opinions and things like that. And that's the worst way to run a business, especially a communications business. And I just thought the The environment. I mean, I think I've told both of you guys, I work mainly off of lists. I don't use my main feed. I have a politics list, and I've got a sports business list, and then like a digital tech list. I literally don't even look at the main feed anymore. And if you do it that way, it's okay. But the main feed just is ain't what it used to be. I'm obviously not the only one to say that, but I don't like it as much as I used to. So I decided why spend time and why create value for them to the extent I was creating value. I don't know. What do you
Yeah.
think?
I guess I would say that irrespective of what you may think of Elon Musk's obvious political views, he's clearly the one of the top three greatest entrepreneurs of my lifetime, for sure. I mean, this dude is putting rockets in space, right? And you know, obviously he's done, I mean, he says it arrogantly, but he has done more for electric cars and the climate than probably any other human being, however imperfect it is, which I would agree it is very imperfect. What I would say is that the mission that was stated to create a digital town square where there isn't a bias for one side of an aisle or another, I think personally resonated with me given how COVID played out specifically. But I would say that the execution on that mission that was stated has been subpar. So I say all of that to say, like, you know, everything is an incomplete. Obviously, he got fucking waxed on the. On the like investment. I mean, this thing is not worth anywhere near $45 billion. So, but
It's hard
I
to
do.
find a decent looking brand as an advertiser. And since they're like 95% ad based, you really wonder how they're even making any money. It's all these weird little doodad ads that you get constantly, but you're not seeing the Cokes and Pepsis and Toyotas and Nissans and stuff like you used to.
I mean, I do generally think that one good thing he did bring out was, I mean, he cut the product by like, he cut the staff by like 80%. And I mean, the product, like, sure, it's not as good, but it's like not really that noticeable to me. And so I think that's like, I sort of was, and there's a lot of wastage in big companies and in my experience. And that's why I like working in a 30 person company is because like there is no BS. Like we execute on what matters. We don't, thankfully, the company's bootstrapped. It's, you know, there's no investors, so we don't have board meetings. We don't have BS. We can just focus. And I think that 15% of time makes a huge difference. And so, you know, when I think about these big companies, you know, there's just, I mean, I think he clearly pointed out that there's, that they're, you probably can run them a lot more efficiently. And the final
Right,
point I would say
and
is,
I'm sorry, go
yeah,
ahead. Yeah.
no. I mean, I would just say, like, Linda Yaccarino, I did get a chance to know her personally a little bit. I mean, she is an awesome person, too. I mean, she's probably got the worst job in America.
Yeah, don't envy her. Joe, any thoughts on what we just
No,
discussed?
I agree with what Matt said. I think it's still a viable platform and place to get news. You just have to have a better filter than you've ever had before because of the way it's set up. But I like everything else, I still think it's incredibly valuable, especially for our business. So
Yeah.
maybe we'll pull you back
Oh
to
yeah, and it's well, no, again, I'm using it. I'm just not contributing like I used to. And it's funny when the earthquake happened, literally everybody's like,
It's the
what's
first thing you
going
do.
on? What's going
Yeah.
on? I
It's the
went to
first thing you do.
Twitter, trending was hashtag earthquake, and one of the first tweets was, kind of feels like the old Twitter with this
Yeah,
event,
I saw that. Yeah. Sure.
Which was a great sentiment because it did like, well, that's what you do. Yeah, so I still think there's ways to use it. I just I'm not as fond of it as I used to be. And when Elon continues to do these, in my humble opinion, these really hypocritical things and statements, it's just really annoying to think that you're supporting him. By the way, in all due respect to his success as an entrepreneur in tech and science, doesn't mean you know how to run a communications platform. It's a
Yeah, no
really
doubt.
different skill set, different world, as we all know. And as they all wring their hands over moderation, and you see the bots problem continue, you kind of want to just yell out, if you really want to solve this problem, maybe you do two-factor authentication. Like, there's ways to get around this. Not, I mean, it's not get around to, I think, improve the problem, but they don't seem to really take it as seriously as he likes to say he does.
Yeah.
You would know
It is
more
a
about that than text.
challenging problem, that's for
Yeah,
sure.
I
It
understand.
is a very, very challenging problem.
I know you got to go in a minute. Any final thoughts? You know, we ask all of our guests about some career advice. So maybe a twist on that, since you've been on before, is what are the top three things you would tell a young entrepreneur based on these last few years?
It's funny. I was gonna say that it's probably the my biggest regret personally. And whatever, you can go look at my LinkedIn, it's cool, flashy brands, whatever, big companies. But I've worked my way, managed to work my way smaller and smaller. And I do think that my biggest regret is not going smaller sooner. And so I think like the world
Interesting.
today, it's so easy to just build shit with AI, with OpenAI, with anything, with tools. Just start building shit, and see where it takes you. So
Well, that is, but by the way, I always smile when I read your LinkedIn, refer to your LinkedIn profile, because I think your line is, I build things or something like that. Yeah. Joe, how many people on LinkedIn, have that as their descriptor? I
They have
build.
some bullshit like team successful team leader of,
Right.
whatever initiatives. It's like, dude, shut up. Like, it's just so unauthentic.
Love it.
But thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it. It's always great to be on. And yeah, if anybody wants to reach out, happy to
Yeah,
chat
and
with
we urge
anybody who's
everybody to check
looking
out
for one.
Odds Jam. Thank you so much. You're a really busy guy, but it's always nice to see you and to catch up. And your insights on the industry are quite interesting. So thank you for sharing them.
Thanks for making the time, guys. Great to
All
see you.
right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you on the next episode. Enjoy Final Four weekend.